It just was really metal because, like, it's a phantom seat, so it's going to be like this undead, decrepit thing. And you got the shirtless, muscly barbarian brandishing a great axe above their head, screaming into battle. It's like, yeah, just do that. That's
yeah.
It's like... Welcome to Monsters and Multiclass, your Dungeons & Dragons fix. I'm Eliodi.
I'm Jared Bornigal.
And I'm Will Milton.
And on this episode, we are taking a look at the Barbarian Warlock. Again, we did this one back in May of 2019. Like a decade ago at this point, it feels like. Yeah. So before a lot of changes came out, definitely before Tasha's and some other cool subclasses, and we were just kind of newer at this then, but we really liked it. And so we kind of wanted to come back to it. So this is part of the next one in our Redux series, Barbarian Warlock. Jared?
Yeah, so for a Barbarian Warlock, in order to multiclass into it, you need 13 strength. If you're not familiar, barbarians are a specific type of fighter that's less formally trained and more so angry to the point of being able to call upon their ancestors to beat the applesauce out of you, to pull a phrase from Will. And warlocks take 13 charisma to multiclass into. They're the weird loner caster in the corner. They obtain their powers through a pact with a powerful entity and have a very different type of spell casting than the rest of casters in 5e. Instead of a bunch of spell slots of varied levels that come back on a long rest, we've got a few spell slots, all at their highest level, that come back on a short rest. And before we get into our thoughts on it, if you have any thoughts on the Barbarian Warlock, or if you've ran a Barbarian Warlock before and it's worked for you, go and leave a comment down below, and then we'll see if our thoughts align once you actually listen to us talk about it. So, first thoughts on Barbarian Warlock. I know I've got a bunch, but if I keep talking, then everybody just shuts off. We've got the numbers for it. They just don't want to listen to me. Let's hear from Ellie. What are your thoughts on the Barbarian Warlock?
Yeah, so this one's definitely not a common one that people think of with multiclassing. You have the big problem of barbarians' main thing is raging. And while they're raging, they can't cast any spells. And a warlock's main thing is casting spells. For the most part. But there's enough here. If you kind of really dig into the intricacies of how things work and certain subclasses and stuff, things get actually mixed together in a really cool way. And there's a ton of awesome flavor options.
Yeah, I think it's been said time and time again that warlocks are some of the most flavorful. So it's like the most flavorful class. Potentially. A lot of baked in hooks into the class itself.
Right. They make really great multi-classes. I don't know if I'd say the most flavorful class overall, because that just depends on the character, but definitely the easiest to make a multi-class.
Most flavorful class overall.
Definitely easy to make it a flavorful multi-class because it's a deliberate choice. Your character is choosing to get in a pact with some sort of entity to get additional powers. That's a lot of player agency. It's not the story happens to them. It's they are making it happen. And that's generally like, I'll say better writing. I know we're not like writing out stories with our characters, but in a sense it kind of is. And it's usually a lot more entertaining and engaging for everyone involved.
Definitely agree. And that's how I think we've flavored every warlock of recent time at our table. Will, what are your first thoughts on this multiclass? You lover of warlocks.
Yeah, no, it objectively improves the barbarian by adding a dollop of warlock. I think the biggest problem, though, is there is always that temptation, that very, very juicy and justified temptation to just say, you know, I think I'm going to be a hexblade. And I think it's going to be really tough to justify not doing that in a lot of ways mechanically.
Really? I felt the opposite way. I feel like this is one of the few times where Hexblade doesn't really make sense to me. I don't know why you'd bother with it. Because Barbarian gives you everything that you need out of Hexblade. The ability to use, you know, different weapons and such seems like the obvious. Unless Pact of the Blade has some major limitations that I'm forgetting about.
No, I think Will meant, obviously correct me, Will, that if you want to play like the melee-focused kind of warlocky spellcaster, play just a Hexblade, pure Hexblade.
Oh, is that what you mean?
In a way, yeah. And even if you do dip into Barbarian, you do still run into what am I going to do in combat? Am I going to hit stuff or am I going to cast? The desire to do both is always stepped on by the Barbarian's just innate nature.
Sure.
Of hitting stuff?
Yeah, hit stuff with or strength. Cast. You get to pick.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, which goes right into one of the big issues to just keep in mind through this is basically all of the barbarians' features that make them hit things better all rely on strength.
Yes.
The rage damage is when you make a attack using strength. Reckless attack is when you make an attack using strength.
Which is why I don't see Hexblade being worthwhile. Pact of the Blade right. at third level can make sense. But Hexblade, the entire benefit is that you only have to rely on charisma. But Barbarian, you don't get that option. You can't use right. charisma for any of the joys of being a Barbarian. So it's, to me, all you're getting out of Hexblade's Curse at a first level dip is going to be the Hexblade's Curse, which makes it so you can, you know, mark a target, you gain a bonus to damage rolls against the cursed target, bonus equals your proficiency bonus, and any attack you make against the cursed target is a critical hit on a roll of a 19 or 20, which
is a bit awesome. Of a sleeper on
yeah,
there.
That's nice. That's super good nice. For me,
because barbarians get brutal critical, so they want to crit more.
At ninth level. Yeah. I mean, it's sure. down the road. It's down the road.
Yeah.
But this is a once per short or long rest ability, so it can have its use. If I'm being honest, like the more I see Hexblade's Curse at the table, the less I really love it, just because it is a single target once per short rest, unless you're playing a game that has a specific, hey, this is the boss moment, every single short rest, like this is the one that you need to focus on. It's okay. I mean, it's nice. It's not bad by any means. That would be a ridiculous statement, but it's not worth going into from a barbarian perspective in my eyes.
I guess it just depends. Hexblades also get shield and wrathful smite as like on their spell list, which is nice. And then there are invocations that improve the hex, and using this hex and the invocations that could do things with the hex are all stuff that could be done raging, because it's not a spell, it's a class feature. And then there's stuff like maddening hex. I'm looking for it. So you can't get to fifth level, but then it's as a bonus action, you cause psychic disturbance around the targets cursed by your hex spell or by a warlock feature, such as your Hexblade curse or sign of omen. So basically you deal psychic damage to the cursed target in each creature of your choice within 5 feet, and that equals your charisma modifier. It must be within 30 feet of you. There's also Relentless Hex, where same sort of thing, the hex spell or one of the features, and then you could use your bonus action to teleport to the enemy.
Nice.
And I think there's one more. I was trying to find it real quick, and I'm not where it will last longer. Like, you can move it. Or is that just or is that just part of...
That is part
no,
of Hexblade.
No, that's just Master of Hexes. Never mind. That's the 14th level Hexblade. That's not an invocation.
Correct. Yeah, that I mean, some of those are nice.
For the record.
An invocation?
I believe that used to be the UA.
Okay.
And everyone was like, I'm not sure about that. Seems kind of mandatory.
A lot of those are really high level, and that's, I guess, what makes me kind of count them out. Even that Relentless Hex is a 7th level warlock ability, so you have to be 7 sure. levels in Hexblade in order for this to really pay off, which... You know, at that point, we're talking about maybe 3 levels Barbarian, 7 in Warlock. So you're at 10th level finally, and you get to teleport as a bonus action. I guess that's pretty cool. So I'll give it that. And it's not just once per turn or anything. Or sorry, once per combat or something like
right.
that. So yeah, that can definitely have its uses, especially if you are trying not to be ranged. I think the one thing that I see being a struggle sometimes is as your warlock levels begin to outpace your barbarian levels to a large extent, or I'll just say your caster levels, it becomes less and less worthwhile to rage, do the melee that you're trying to do, and you know, get sure. those benefits that you originally set out for, which isn't like a negative, but just something that I worry about when putting a weird amalgamation together like this.
Sure. And especially then if you don't get extra attack around character level 5, where at that point you wouldn't, like, you'd be really delayed on it. And then it's like even less worthwhile because your cantrip damage keeps going up no matter what.
Yeah. You have to do Pact of the Blade if you're doing Hexblade for this multi-class. It's really kind of like regardless, you should be doing.
Right, you get like what's it, like Life Drinker or something like that, where you get basically extra attack at fifth.
Yes, Thirsting Blade, I think is that one.
Yep.
And Thirsting Blade allows you to get an extra attack at fifth level. And what actually can be nice is if you are going, you know, Warlock, let's say to five, and then you go into Barbarian, once you hit Barbarian level five, next time you level up as a Warlock, you can switch out that invocation. So usually it really stinks if a class, let's say like Bard has a couple of classes, subclasses that give you an extra attack at sixth level. And it's like, well, okay, I don't want to do sixth level Bard and then fifth level Fighter because now I've got a dead level for Fighter. Well, this makes it so, you know, maybe for one level you've got an invocation that's useless, but then next level you get rid of it and you're right where you need to be. Sure. And if your DM's cool, they'll just let you switch it out when you take that fifth level in Barbarian.
Specifically with Back to the Blade, though, a Barbarian being able to summon their weapon in their hand is pretty cool. Because they stay in action and they materialize their weapon. And so I feel like there's always that situation where the characters are without their gear. That's something we always talk about, like as a monk, that's kind of a plus. They're just fine. A Barbarian being able to just like summon a weapon in their hand and then be fine unarmored because they have unarmored defense. It would be hard to keep that character down.
Right. One thing you mentioned around Hexblade, going back to the spell aspect, you mentioned they have Shield and Wrathful Smite. Well, those are very good spells, no argument there, but it is important to keep in mind this whole idea of once they're raging, those can't be used at all.
Right.
So that, I guess what I usually try to look for in general, and I guess this is moving away from Hexblade a little bit here, is just what spells can be used that don't take concentration and can potentially give benefit for the length of the fight. And there's not a ton on the Warlock spell list that jumps out at me, but there's one really, really big one that I think is worth talking about, and that's Armor of Agathys.
Oh, isn't that concentration?
No. It is not concentration.
Okay. Because so, I made a list too, and I skipped that one because I thought it was concentration.
Well, don't you know you can sort on D&D Beyond by whether or not it requires concentration?
I know. I was just going through my level and whatever.
Got to use them filters. Mm-hmm. It's the reason
why... You're making it sound like we're sponsored by D&D Beyond. We're not.
Not yet. We're not
yeah.
We can dream. If you're listening, D&D Beyond, also give me a job. I want to make your product better. So... So Armor of Agathys is the one that jumps out at me because you get it scales with higher casting. So if you're casting it at first level, you get 5 temp HP. And when a creature hits you with is it a melee attack or if they just do damage to you?
With the melee attack.
Okay, if they hit you with a melee attack, which barbarians are obviously trying to provoke at all opportunities, they will take 5 damage back. Or if it's at second level, you get 10 temp HP and they take 10 damage. And if they only do 2 damage, let's say, they still take 10. It's not like, you know, per damage they deal, they take that same amount back. So any way that you can make those temp HP last longer is awesome. So first turn, casting Armor of Agathys at whatever spell slot you've got available, and then raging means that you now have temp HP that's going to hopefully last longer with your resistance to physical damage.
Yeah, that is a really cool combination. Yeah, I missed that one. Especially if you go like Barbarian, the Bear Totem Barbarian, yeah, and resistance to all of it. Unless there's something really stupid about how resistances doesn't apply to temp HP, right?
Not that I know of.
Okay, because I know there's some weirdness around temp HP, but I don't think that's any of it. It's hard to justify if you're not going really high in Warlock. Because then you just cast this level 1 and it's 5 temp HP. If you're resistant to everything, you could essentially say it's 10 temporary HP. That's one hit. Like, yeah, at higher levels, if you're like a level 10 character and all can only cast Armor of Agathys at level 1, it stops being worth it.
I by no means disagree with that. I mean, it does get you... what level do you get second level spell slots for Warlock? I assume third level.
Yeah, it's the same as all other full casters. Yeah.
Okay, I would I guess getting to third level to me is almost a requirement with Warlock. Just, and we've talked about that before, because getting second level spells, getting your two invocations, and getting two spell slots just kind of makes it necessary. Mm-hmm. So I, not that, you know, early on you wouldn't have this, but if we are talking about going further, I would expect at least three levels in Warlock. So you do get 10, which if you're raging, and again, we'll say Barbarian just for the fun of it, would be 20 HP effectively.
Which is a lot better. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's not going to tank every single hit ever. And you may have some where it's just not enough. But on a turn where usually, or a lot of times I see Barbarians first turn are raging and then trying to run up into the melee and maybe not able to make it all of the way, it's a good middle ground as you kind of get set and get prepared. So even then, you know, it might be like, oh, we're fighting a dragon. Maybe I don't spend my action casting Armor of Agathys because this, you know, 10 HP isn't going to do very much for me when it blasts me with a fire breath. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I do love that combination though of the resistance.
So what effectively spell doubling it. Were you thinking of though?
So I have a little list going. I was doing this based off of, and I didn't go too high in level, because like eighth level spells just for multi-classes, even for non-multi-classes, really come up. But
yeah.
I was going off the criteria of, yeah, either something they could cast before raging and then not be in concentration, because they can't concentrate while raging, or something, a utility that could give them like an additional burst of damage in combat, especially if they can't reach. So first, just any AoE spell. Like, Barbarians don't really have AoE. Like, they hit one thing, and they could hit a second thing if they're fifth level. And, like, maybe if they took Polar Armor Master, they could hit a fourth thing a little less hard. But Warlocks do get AoEs. There's AoE cantrips, and then just AoE spells that they could pick. And if a Barbarian rolls high in initiative, which they do eventually get advantage on, if I'm... Is that right?
Oh, jeez. That sounds right.
Isn't that Feral Instinct?
Have we read this at all? Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Feral Instinct. Yeah. There's so much to keep in your head. Yeah. There's, and like their dexterity is not something that they just want to like.
So, oh no, I'm sorry. Rereading Feral Instinct, I thought that was going to have a caveat to it, but it does say your instincts are so honed that you have advantage on initiative rolls. That's fine. Additionally, yeah. If you're surprised at the beginning of combat and aren't incapacitated, you can act normally on your first turn, but only if you enter your rage before doing anything else on that turn. That only really matters if you're surprised. I was worried it said you needed to rage to have advantage on initiative rolls, but that's not the case.
Sure. But yeah, so it's not absurd to think the Barbarian's going to be going near the top of the initiative more often. So being able to capitalize on that and cast an AoE before the enemy spread out or something is pretty nice. Also, just picking ranged cantrips for a backup, because Barbarians are notoriously terrible at ranged attacks. But it's like, you pick a javelin and have a really limited range. And
you only get, you know, one, maybe two of those, compared to if you do get to 11th level total, now you're getting three Eldritch Blasts.
Exactly.
You know, that's good damage.
Yep, absolutely. So it's good backup, or like Take Toll to Den or something. And then in terms of actual spells, Mirror Image...
Yes.
Is awesome for defense. It's not concentration. This is when it makes three copies of yourself. And then if something goes to attack you, you have to roll a d20. And then if it's above a certain number, it hits one of the images. And then that image is dispersed, because I think it has like one health. It's not much. And then the number that you have to roll above gets lower. So it gets kind of easier. But it's a really cool defensive spell. That I said, it takes no concentration. So that combined with the resistance of when you do get hit with it up, it just makes you even that much tankier, which is really kind of frightening for a Barbarian.
Yeah. I mean, it makes you like, I guess these combination of spells and such, like with Warlock, it takes you from being a tank as a Barbarian and turns you into like a steel porcupine. Like not right. only do you not want to hit them because, oh, it's not going to do that much. It's when I hit them, it's going to suck. So with Mirror Image, it's like you're going to miss a lot. It's just going to be wasted attacks entirely, potentially.
Right. I have Misty Stepped out, which they can't do while raging, but there's enough uses for a Misty Step, like an emergency. A lot of times, if you're in a situation where you really need a Misty Step, it's usually worth dropping your rage.
Yep, I would agree with that.
Yeah, or cast the first turn to get up in the face better. But it's a bonus action, so it's the same slot as Rage, which is also bonus action, so you just need to keep that in mind. But it will definitely have its uses. Same with Counterspell. Again, you would have to drop your Rage to cast Counterspell, but often, again, if there's...
You can drop Rage at any time. Is it any time on your turn?
Oh, I didn't think of that.
You can also end your Rage. Oh, it's a bonus action. You have to end Rage on your turn as a bonus action. That actually...
Shit.
That hurts a lot for Misty Step.
That does. Damn. I miss... Okay.
That sucks. I mean, when does that come up? Usually it's like, oh yeah, I end my Rage. And it's like, okay, whatever. But, you know.
Right.
Wow, that's a bummer.
Right.
Okay, it's almost like they kind of designed this to not be overpowered spellcasters.
Compared to the spellcasters, which are overpowered spellcasters.
Heaven forbid.
And then Magic Circle. So, okay, yeah.
Oh, that's a
Misty Step
one, right?
And Counterspell. Maybe not the greatest because that bonus action crap. Magic Circle is a situational spell, but it's a third level spell, and it's a fifth level warlock. To get to it, it doesn't take concentration. It is a minute to cast, so it's like a preparation spell. But a member of the party having this could be really, really useful, where you create a big circle, and then you could bar certain things, fey fiends, undead elementals, or celestials from entering it. And then if your party's standing in it and attacking at those things on the outside, the creatures have like disadvantage and you can't be charmed and frightened and possessed and things like that. So it's situational, but like if you're, especially if in a campaign or like an adventure where you're like fighting a bunch of undead or something like that, and you have time to prep, it's a really awesome spell. And like I said, it's not concentration and it lasts an hour. So good spell for the Barbarian Warlock to do preparing for battle.
Yeah. Which is actually a pretty good segue into the other thing that I look for in terms of a barbarian spellcaster multiclass here. And it's what you can get out of combat and what you can do to prepare for out of combat or just in general utility you get. Because one of the biggest hangups I have with even playing a barbarian myself just straight through is that out of combat, they have almost nothing. They get the least skills of any class. And even with the Tasha's rework or optional class features, they only get an additional skill off of the barbarian list at third level and 10th level, which, by the way, Will, don't forget to add those optional features for the campaign we're starting soon. You know, it's not enough to really make up for what barbarians lack. And, you know, just having skills is... it's okay. But getting some spells, if, for example, you want to go into the Pact of the Tome Warlock, can really open things up in terms of out of combat utility. This might have a lot of overlap in the event that you have a full caster. If you have a wizard, for example, I probably wouldn't recommend going Pact of the Tome because there's just going to be tons of overlap and ritual spells aren't ones that you need like multiple people in the party to have.
Yeah. So Pact of the Tome gets you, it's just like an extra spell, right?
Pact of the Tome by itself gets you three cantrips, but the Invocation Book of Ancient Secrets gets you two ritual spells at first.
That was it. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. A lot of information to vomit out. In terms of good ritual spells, good first level ritual spells, identify, find familiar, floating disc, unseen servant, comprehend languages, alarm, and of course detect magic. Again, if you have a wizard, probably not the best direction to go, but if you don't have anyone else who can do ritual casting, these are all really, really useful spells to have in a party.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, that was my other take on that too. I didn't write any specifically down, but there's also just on the warlock spell list, there are out of combat utility spells. Take them as a barbarian and then you get usefulness, even if you're not going Pact of the Tome.
Yeah, that's usually one of the hard parts with being a warlock is they get so few spell slots. You're like, well, you know, I want to focus on the in-combat stuff. Well, you don't really need to this time around because you're not going to use all of your spell slots in combat realistically.
Right. Yeah, and warlocks get a lot of illusion and enchantment spells, which is a lot of out-of-combat stuff, charms and things like that. So.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of uses there. In terms of a specific subclass, the Fathomless is definitely worth talking about. That's the new one in, it's not so new anymore, but in Tasha's. It still feels like Tasha's came out last month.
It's new to me, damn it.
It'll be 2 years in November, won't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So it's a year and a half old.
Yeah, I don't know. Time gets weird with the COVID times. Anyways, so the Fathomless, the flavor is their patron is like an unknowable like monster of the deep, like Cthulhu and things like that. And they're very tentacle themed. Their biggest feature, which they get right at level one, is Tentacles of the Deep. They can, as a bonus action, summon and create a tentacle that lasts for 1 minute, and it can attack things within 10 feet of it, doing 1d8 cold damage and reducing the speed by 10 feet, and the damage goes up at 10th level. And then on every one of the turns, they retake their bonus action to move the tentacle 30 feet, repeat the attack. And there, you could summon the tentacle number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, so it goes up on that, not anything like Warlock level or Charisma. So this could be used while raging. They could first turn, bonus action rage, action attack, and then the next turn, they're raging, they probably don't have a use for the bonus action. Barbarians typically don't. So they can summon in a tentacle and have it hit stuff, and that's an extra d8 damage.
Yeah, use of the bonus action.
Yeah. It is your melee spell attack, so it's using your charisma, so you just need to be a little careful with that.
Yeah, the reduction in speed is also good, because if the barbarian's biggest weakness is their enemy running away. So right. If you have a way to say, no, you stay here, then, or just enough that you can catch up, then that's a fantastic combination.
Right, and that's a bonus attack, and essentially gives them a 40-foot range attack as well. Because you can move at 30 feet, and that's a 10-foot range.
Yeah. Yeah, only thing I don't love is that it takes two turns to get started on it, because you obviously have to rage one of those times, and realistically you'd want to do that first turn, otherwise you're missing out on a lot of rage damage and damage resisted.
Right.
But in the fights that are going to be a little bit longer, that's really useful.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that's going to be a theme of this combination, though, is taking kind of two turns to get everything up and running. Like even that it's armor true. Of Agatha stuff you're saying, it's like, it's going to take two turns.
It's very true. But that's actually what's, to me, almost nice about it, because for the short fights, a lot of times raging as a barbarian can feel like a waste. If you're just going to be fighting three goblins, it's like, well, okay, do I rage? Do I use one of my limited abilities to that only comes back on a long rest, mind you. It doesn't come back on a short rest like maybe a warlock spells do. Does give you some versatility. And in the event that you, let's say, are in one of those short fights, you don't want to waste your rage, then you can do Tentacles of the Deep first time. You get your bonus action attack, and maybe you do some spell casting as well. It's that added versatility, and I think this does combine well with that. For shorter fights, you focus more on your warlock stuff. For longer fights, you've got longevity for sure.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, we didn't really talk about that in detail. Yeah, but like the versatility this offers of a barbarian with a spellcaster of any kind. And we just ran a campaign where one of the players was a barbarian wizard, and she did really great at it. The character felt very useful, very versatile. And I don't see why Warlock would be any different.
No.
You just like address this current situation at hand. It's like, all right, is it better for me to rage and give up spellcasting and get the damage resistance and hitting things hard, or stay back and do spellcasting? And usually there was a pretty optimal choice.
Yeah.
It was often pretty obvious, like, what was the best thing to do in that situation.
And that was by no means something I was like, as a DM, prepping for in mind. I was making normal encounters, and it happened to be that they would choose what's the best option here.
Right.
Yeah, it's a lot of times barbarians fall into the problem where they're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, and I just love adding that spell casting because they get the round peg.
Yes. They get a morphing peg.
Yes. We all know barbarians love pegs. Pegging? Yes. Is there a joke there? Nope.
I mean, kind of, I guess. I don't know.
Other subclass ideas. Did you have anything more on Fathomless, like later levels?
Also, I just like the flavor of it.
Okay, yeah, go
ahead. I can definitely see like an ocean-themed barbarian who has like creepy magic tentacle powers. Yeah. The official art for the Fathomless is kind of barbarian looking. It's like this like shirtless, kind of muscly shirtless dude. And Tasha's. And it's like, that's kind of barbarian-esque.
Yeah, I was going to say the Storm Herald would be, flavor-wise, a good overlap. I know the Storm Herald's not really my favorite overall subclass, but sadly, their ability takes a bonus action to activate for all of their abilities.
Oh, from the barbarian side?
Yes, yeah. From the barbarian side. Because, yeah, Storm Herald of the Sea mixed with Fathomless is just, it's there. That's the flavor, but
right,
not really going to work.
Totem Warrior reskinned a little bit. Instead of like picking like bear and eagle and elk, you're picking like shark and dolphin and octopus or whatever.
Yep. Easy.
Just sea creatures. Yep. Zealot, Path of the Zealot with literally any warlock. It actually works really well. You're a zealot to your patron.
Yeah. It's like that's a fantastic NPC, like a cultist barbarian warlock. Yeah. That's good. And I guess you could do Ancestral Guardian if your people were like seafaring people. Then it
could make
sense.
I was thinking that too. Or maybe not even your like ancestors. It's just
ancient spirits. Like
there's a lot of death surrounding the ocean and it has that kind of mystique and mythos to it. And so like you tap into like the lost souls in the ocean.
I like that. That's actually really neat. You're almost like a positive spin on it, which isn't a bad thing. I hear warlock and I'm like, it has to be evil. But you know, like you're a watcher of those lost souls. You're kind of living on in their name and doing that aspect. I'm sure there'd be a lot of cool ways to take that.
Yeah.
One that's kind of an easy one to throw on to literally any warlock subclass is the Path of Wild Magic. Because it's one of those, like, you can just say it comes from the same source if you want to be entirely lazy about it. And and it's not even a bad thing. Like, sometimes it's okay to be like, well, I want these mechanics, and I see how the warlock part works. I kind of see how the barbarian part works, but none of these other subclasses are speaking to me. Fine. Path of the Wild Magic is easy enough to say that when your warlock patron gave you powers, you know, they might have pressed a few extra buttons and now you're all messed up.
You're all surgy.
Yeah, you're just a little bit magic surgy.
Right. I said, any of them, really.
One combination that I liked is a werewolf. If you went Path of the Beast, then you could probably combine that with, I guess I don't know if I chose a warlock in particular. What would make
Fiend
sense?
Fiend feels fitting there. I know Fiend is specifically like a devil or a demon.
I would actually say Archfey might be more fitting.
But yeah, either you're right. Flavor-wise, yeah.
Flavor-wise, yes. Obviously, mechanically, the Archfey is never too exciting. Yeah, like it's the first level. Starting at first level, your patron bestows upon you the ability to project the beguiling and fearsome presence of the Fey. As an action, you can cause each creature in a 10-foot cube originating from you to make a wisdom saving throw against your warlock spell save. The creature that fails are all charmed or frightened by you until the end of your next turn. And that's once per short or long rest. That does work while raging, which is nice. I don't know if causing creatures to be frightened of you is... I guess that can be pretty nice as a barbarian, especially if you're reckless attacking. They're going to have advantage on you otherwise.
Yeah, actually, that fits pretty well with barbarian. As just a straight warlock, it's never felt that good because you generally, unless you're a hexblade, which you're not if you're an archfey, you generally don't want to be within 10 feet of all your enemies.
Yeah.
But as a barbarian warlock who then gets to frighten all of them, who then gets disadvantage on... I mean, just all attacks when you're nearby.
Yeah, could actually
can't
be
move
worth it.
Closer to you. Like, yeah.
And then I would also say Misty Escape becomes a bit more intriguing to me because at sixth level, when you take damage, you can use your reaction to turn invisible and teleport up to 60 feet to an unoccupied space you can see. You remain invisible until the start of your next turn or until you attack or cast a spell. That could be interesting. I could see, actually a really good way to do this. Oh, no, that'd be using your reaction. Well, either way, it lets you reposition 60 feet of movement as a reaction, and being invisible for the rest of your turn is really worthwhile.
Yeah. Yeah, and you could do that while raging. That does not end rage.
I was thinking it'd be nice if you could teleport yourself next to an enemy who's like going to move, and you know they're going to move, and because you're invisible, they don't see you. Then you get an opportunity attack against them, but you already used your reaction, so that doesn't work.
Right. Also, they get Fairy Fire and Sleep as their first level spells, like as a pick, which are two really amazing low level spells. That's like just a salad thing. And then, yeah, those are both concentration, so it would need to be actually Sleep.
Sleep is not concentration.
Sleep's not concentration. Holy shit. Okay. There we go. That goes down the list. I guess you have to go Archfey to get it because Warlocks don't get it otherwise. But for a low level, that Sleep's one of those amazing spells. You roll 5d8. The total is how many hit points creatures the spell can affect. Creatures within 20 feet of the point you can choose are affected in ascending order of the current hit points. And then they go unconscious. There's no save.
Yeah.
So like, you know, past like fourth, fifth level, it really starts to fall off because health goes up really fast and upcasting it doesn't keep up. But that's definitely worthwhile. Like in your first turn as the barbarian, cast sleep as your action, rage as a bonus action.
Yeah. No, that seems like a really good start. Yeah. So yeah, I will put that flag down for Archfey. Archfey and Path of the Beast would be a really good combination and would give you that werewolf flavor of, you know, you've been cursed in some fashion and that's given you these, cursed by a fey. That's pretty simple. And it has you transform. And I think the only part that's weird about that, it's like you're cursed and also you have some magic because of it. Maybe a bit odd, but it could be one of those you entered into an agreement that you weren't fully aware of what it meant. So they're like, yeah, we'll give you some power. You get some spell casting. I'll let you do some damage and whatever. And you're like, oh, this all sounds great. And then you get a little bit too mad and your mouth turns into a muzzle. So it's interesting.
Yeah. You'd have to be interested in how to roleplay that. Cause obviously as written, you have total control of when you rage and what you transform into and things like that, with Path of the Beast. So you'd kind of have to.
Yeah,
play that up a little bit.
I agree. I mean, that's hey, part of the fun, right? And I think is there parts of it where it's like you just do have some of those features all times or no?
No, I don't think
no,
so.
No, maybe not.
Not really.
Okay, well, yeah, you can say you do if you want. I just constantly have a tail.
Just make stuff up.
I mean, if it's flavor, yes, just make stuff up.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, you know, the DM and you can have a thing where on a full moon, which is whenever they feel like it, because who tracks moon cycles in their games? But on a full moon, then you transform and you lose control of yourself or have to succeed on constitution saving throws and whatnot. Sometimes I would rather that stuff just be worked out between the DM and character than baked into the class. For example, the blood, I'm forgetting the class name, Bloodhunter. The Bloodhunter lycanthropy has stuff baked in there where like there's a chance you might attack your friendly characters and such. I don't really like that.
Yeah, that stuff could be rough.
Yeah, so
that's better on an NPC.
Definitely, especially if it's like an NPC that's traveling with the party.
Who the party gains much rapport with. A diminutive.
That's a good idea.
Perhaps in a cave. A large cave system. Impossibly large. Maybe invaded by demons.
Are you referencing something? Is this an Out of the Abyss thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, did somebody have lycanthropy?
Yeah. Where rat? Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, no party numbers, but yeah.
Schmeedle.
Yeah.
No. Nope.
It was... Yep, that was it.
I forgot the names.
Were rat gnome Smeagol. The name doesn't matter. Yeah, I guess other subclass combo ideas.
So the undead warlock, the no, another
not
new
the
one.
Undying.
Yeah, not the undying, the undead. Which the main thing is they get form of dread. So you manifest an aspect of your patron's dreadful power. As a bonus action, you transform for 1 minute. You gain the following benefits. You gain 10 hit points equal to 1d10 plus your warlock level. So that's that, just like a form of Agathys, that kind of interacts with the resistance where it kind of almost doubles it.
Yeah.
Once during each of your turns, when you hit a creature with an attack roll, you can force it to make a wisdom save. And if the saving throw fails, the target is frightened of you until the end of your next turn, and you're immune to being frightened. You can just number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, regain all on a long rest. So the immune to frightened, I think barbarians get.
No.
That's one of the subclasses, isn't it?
Yeah, Path of the Berserker gets mindless rage.
That's
where you
it.
Can't
okay.
be charmed or frightened while raging.
Yeah.
But that being the worst of the barbarians, it's total oversight.
Right. So yeah, this form drag can be done while raging. It's not a spell. They both share a bonus action, so there's that two-turn messiness again, which isn't great, but it could be worked around, or this could be an alternative to raging. You either rage or you do this, depending on
the situation.
Yeah, the situation. And then those are some good benefits, especially for a melee character. If you get high enough, you start doing necrotic damage. Yeah, at level 6, you get Grave Touch in addition once during each of your turns. When you hit a creature with an attack roll and roll damage against a creature, you can replace the damage type with necrotic. While you're using Form of Dread, you could roll one additional damage die when determining the necrotic damage the target takes. So, if you're like a barbarian with like a great axe using the D12, you get an extra D12 roll.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Really, really good combination.
Yeah.
And would only need to be level 9 to take full use of that, I think, because you could be 3 levels in Barbarian, 6 levels in Warlock, you do Pact of the Blade, and then take Thirsting Blade at 5th level for Warlock, the invocation, so now you've got 2 attacks, and yeah, that should work pretty well at a reasonable level.
Right. Also, the undead spells, Bane's Concentration, so it's just not a great spell, but they get False Life, which is usually not a great spell, but it's not Concentration, first level spell. It gives the target 10 pitch points, not a lot, 1d4 plus 4, but again, interacting with Raging could double it. I don't know if that's worth it. That's more like something you want someone to cast that on you.
Sure.
But as a second level spell, so third level, Warlock, they get Blindness Deafness.
Yeah.
Which usually Warlocks do not get. The Fiend, the Undying, and the Undead all get this. Where it's not a concentration spell, action to cast, last a minute, blind or deafen your target. You could target multiple targets
at higher levels.
Yeah. And it's an awesome spell. Blinding, like, the dangerous melee enemy monster. And then, like, it's like I said, it's not concentration, so they could be raging and stuff. Is really awesome. It could really swing fights.
Yeah, and then also at third level, though this might not be one that you normally think about, you can get Phantom Steed.
Oh, yeah, so third level spell, so fifth yes. level Warlock.
Correct. It's I don't think I've ever once thought of a mounted barbarian, but this thing, if you can work it out, it has a casting time of a minute and duration it lasts for an hour, but you can get a horse that has a speed of 100 feet. That's really, really good. I know this is really not for in combat stuff. I mean, it's ritual casting, it's a riding horse. So it's AC and health is nothing really to speak of. Maybe this is a horrible idea, but I guess I just like the theme of it. The angry barbarian charging into the fight, like to start the fight. Just a third level spell blown just to charge into the fight on a horse.
Yeah. It just feels really metal because like it's a Phantom Steed, so it's going to be like this undead, decrepit thing. And you got the shirtless, muscly barbarian brandishing a great axe above their head, screaming into battle. It's like, yeah, just do that. That's fun.
Yeah. It's like, you really just wasted a third level spell slot on that? It's like, look, how many am I going to get off in this combat anyways? Because I'm going to rage. So,
right.
Yeah, I'm gonna spend the third level spell on this
also, it's free
nightmare horse.
But that's a way better idea for like a gang of fellas that harasses your party.
Oh, okay.
The ghost barbarians who descend from the steppe on their ghost horses.
These sound like such distinguished gentlemen.
Right?
A gaggle of fellows who wish to intimidate your party.
erupting in a cacophony of screams as they descend upon the town.
But yeah, that would be a good combination with Path of the Zealot or Ancestral Guardian, I think would
totally
would be, looking at the...
It's like your dad's dead horse you keep summoning.
No, it's actually your dad. You're riding on your father. I don't know where I'm going with that. Doesn't matter. But for Ancestral Guardians, I guess I forget if that takes up a bonus action to do their cool thing at third level. So it's... I think it's a
reaction.
Ancestral Protectors, starting when you choose this path at third level, Spectral Warriors appear when you enter Rage. While you're raging, the first creature you hit with an attack on your turn becomes the target of the Warriors, which hinders its attacks. Until the start of your next turn, the target has disadvantage on any attack roll that isn't against you. And when the target hits a creature other than you with an attack, the creature has resistance to the damage dealt by the attack. The effect on the target ends early if your rage ends. So that's just great. That doesn't take any bonus action, reaction, anything. It's just part of your rage. That's always a plus. So that mixed with the undead warlock, right? Yeah. Keep forgetting that's undead or undying.
Just push undying out of your head. It's the undead warlock. The undying is not real, Jared. It cannot hurt you anymore.
But it can't die. And that scares me. So just reattaching limbs. I don't get it. So the flavor of undead with your form of dread, as well as your ancestral guardians, instead of calling, you know, your ancestors, I guess it still could be your ancestors, but you know, you're calling spirits. It's a good flavor crossover.
Yeah, definitely. For the sake of thoroughness, we should talk about the genie. That's only like in a newer subclass on the warlock side, we haven't brought up yet.
I like being thorough.
Yeah, it's I think if you have a really cool character concept, this could work, but I wouldn't like chase this just for the mechanics. So at first level, the main thing to get is their vessel, like basically the genie's lamp that you hold on to. So you get bottom respite as an action. You could teleport into the vessel, bring some other people with you. It's just kind of like a safe place to go. We talked about this a lot in the genie episode. Links at the top, which was a somewhat recent one. That's more of an out of combat thing, but there is definitely utility you could use. You could like pop into your lamp and that just gets like tossed on the back of a cart to get past the checkpoint, that sort of stuff. There's a lot of creative uses. So it's just kind of a neat thing for a barbarian to have, but it doesn't necessarily make a barbarian better. They do also get Genie's Wrath. Once during each of your turns, when you hit with an attack roll, you can deal extra damage to the target equal to your proficiency bonus. This type of damage is determined by your patron, bludgeoning, thunder, fire, or cold. The vessel's AC...
Important. It has health and such.
Yeah.
But the Genie's Wrath, one thing that's important to note is it specifies when you hit with an attack roll. So it doesn't say with a melee attack or a spell attack. It's just an attack roll. So that's always great.
And that happens when you're raging. And let's look at the spells. I forgot to do that. Fog clouds, concentration. So no concentration.
Burning hands, that AoE that you talked about. Thunder wave. Yeah.
Yeah, I think warlocks get thunder wave anyways. Just kind of like. No, they don't. Never mind.
Yeah, they can't.
Why would they put that on there? That's stupid. Because it's not a free spell. It's just something they could pick. Anything fun out of a barbarian having Sanctuary? That's one where it's first level spell, bonus action to cast, last minute. You ward the creature. If anybody tries to hit that creature, they make a wisdom saving throw on a fail. They have to choose another target. But if the warded creature attacks, they lose their Sanctuary.
You know, I'm going to say no, unless you happen to be in the Resident Evil 4 of D&D games, where you constantly have somebody that you are bringing along with you that you need to protect. I just don't really see the benefit of that. Your party members are going to be attacking, so it doesn't matter. It's situational at best, which leaves it better for a cleric spell list.
Yeah. If you get up to fifth level and you're an Efreeti genie, you get Fireball. So like, okay, that's just another good AoE.
Yep.
But no, I'm not seeing anything real standout stuff at the lower levels on the genie's expanded spell list. Yeah, no, like, really cool character concepts are coming to mind, other than quite literally, like, a barbarian who found a genie's lamp. And, like, it just doesn't make... Okay, that could be fun. They don't, like, they don't understand what they have.
Yes.
They don't understand, like... And the genie's just so mad about being tied to this new master who just, like, doesn't really get it.
Yes. So if I kill stuff for you, you give me what I want? It's like, well, no, it's a lot more complicated than that. There's a lot of tension in the northern region, and I really need you to go there and get back my land and also free me from this vessel, and then I can grant you a wish, literally whatever you want. What if I don't want to do that? Can I wish for that?
Yeah, there's a lot of fun there.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay, so definitely on board with that. We haven't talked about the dumb barbarian aspect of this. Actually, that works for all of these, because you are not going to have intelligence for this class.
Right.
That is already mad, which I actually don't think we've said that once. This is an extremely mad class. You have to make some sacrifices.
Meaning multi-attribute dependent in this case.
No,
it works
rages.
As a pun in both ways. Yeah.
So it is a multi-attribute dependent class that is going to be difficult to get your charisma up to anything wildly high at low levels. You have to balance strength, dexterity, constitution, and charisma. It's four stats.
Yeah, I'd give up on dexterity.
You need it for your armor class.
But barbarians get medium armor.
Yes, you're right.
So I would just go that route.
Yep, just put it at 16.
Even just plus one or something. Like, no, 16, no, dexterity is still really high.
Sorry, 14, because that gives you plus two, which is all medium armor can benefit from anyways.
Yeah.
That's the magic number. So, you know, it's going to be...
It's still up there, though. You're right. It's not like you don't want to dump dexterity.
And constitution's not going to be probably as high as you want, because usually with a barbarian, it's like, I want 20, 20, 20, 8, 8, 8 for my stat array.
Right.
It's going to be hard to get there. But it's possible, and you're not really focusing on the charisma spell save and everything, so it's not like you need that at 20 right away. It's, you know, you can figure it out.
You can also go the infinite mage armor route. There's the invocation armor of shadows. You can cast mage armor at will without a spell slot. So that'd be 13 plus dex. But no, never mind.
How does that benefit?
Yeah, it doesn't. Never mind.
Wait, that's worse.
Yeah, that is worse. Cause, 13 plus dex versus... Because warlocks don't usually get... medium armor efficiencies,
right. Which is another good thing
that one.
To actually bring up. We are kind of jumping around at this point, but with multi-classing into barbarian, if you start as a warlock, I don't think you get all of those.
There's not a lot.
You have to be really careful with the order you go. This works much better as a barbarian first and then going into warlock.
Yeah.
Barbarian, you get shields, simple weapons, and martial weapons proficiencies.
Yeah, so no armor proficiencies for multi-classing into one.
Yeah.
And warlocks give light armor and simple weapons, which the barbarian already has.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if you could plan it, starting as a barbarian makes more sense. I think that just feels a lot more natural. The barbarian who starts gaining warlock powers because they sought out the patron or tricked into it, you know, playing up the dumb barbarian, not really understanding, like fell into it, not understanding. I know that goes against saying, give the players agency where they could choose it, but a dumb barbarian who like accidentally enters a pact with a patron and doesn't understand what's going on, they can now just shoot lasers out of their hands, is like kind of cool.
Right. They're like, oh, this is awesome. And then no more questions are asked.
Right.
The other way around does feel really odd. I can't think of how you would flavor it where you are a warlock, you get to a certain point, and then you go, this is dumb, I want to swing a big axe and go in that direction. Unless it was given as part of the powers, kind of like what I talked about with the lycanthropy aspect, where it's your patron gives you it and it manifests as both barbarian and warlock powers. But just a warlock switching to barbarian, I just...
Yeah, and even that sort of stuff is tough if you start at level one and slowly level up, because then it's like, I've got that like lycanthropy curse thing going on, but it's like, oh, and like four levels it'll show up.
Just do wait.
Yeah, you could kind of do it like it's like a disease that's manifesting and like you're aware it's going to come, but otherwise the best way to probably do it is if you're making a character that's just higher level, you're making a seventh level character, then you just make the combination and you just kind of hand wave that like there would be this awkwardness where you say, no, they were always like this.
This is truly one of the big reasons I like starting at fourth level or so. It's just not fun to think of character concepts at first level. Like, what did you do before this? I was, you know, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say it's not fun. It's not fun to me, because I know, Will, you in particular love the concept of yesterday I was on the farm, today I have a sword and I'm in a dungeon and I'm probably going to die.
That's fun too. Yes. I mean, they're both good.
Yeah, it's it has limiting, its merits.
Though. I will always acknowledge that you are kind of railroaded to just like very predictable progression.
Yeah. Which again, not a flat out negative. That's totally fine to play. In terms of putting together a warlock barbarian, probably not the class that's going to do it, unless you started as a barbarian who some reason has really high charisma. This is a thought out multi-class.
Yeah. Yes, you need a plan for it.
One thing I did not mention, but is probably worth talking about, looping back around to some of these invocations, because there's so many here. In terms of Pact of the Blade, you can, at fifth level, get the Eldritch Smite, which is not casting a spell, and works really well with Barbarian.
You expend a spell slot, but you're not casting a spell.
Yes.
Tricky wording, but yeah.
Good way to use up those spell slots, even if you're not casting a spell before raging or anything. Honestly, once you get that, if you're just focusing on, you know, Warlock, you could really not cast a spell at all and just use your spells on the Eldritch Smites. And
you're
going to get some use out of it. I mean, that's not a thing to scoff at.
Definitely, yeah. But yeah, I don't think I have anything else on this one.
I don't think so either.
Kept it under an hour.
Look at that. And it's still pretty good. What do you all think? Did you think it was good? Did your expectations line up? Are we doing YouTube correctly? It's been 3 years. We've been doing this for 3 years. I think coming on four.
Yeah.
I should feel more comfortable like advertising the channel, but I'll never get there.
No.
But one place I will get is to the point where I can easily tell you about Bardly, my favorite one of our sponsors, except for the other ones on their episodes. Today it's Bardly, though, where I can use Bardly to easily share music with my players at the table or online. I, as the DM, or if you want to give the powers to somebody else, can easily transition between different songs, different moods, and they're all carefully crafted for your D&D game. So your party goes into a lively tavern, you go, I'm going to choose the lively tavern music. And before you know it, everybody is hearing the lively tavern music. They're into it. They're feeling it. You're going into your DM monologues. They're like, wow, this is amazing. And it's all thanks to Bardly. And I'm so glad you used the code MNM50 to get 50% off your first 3 months. And you're like, I know. I'm super glad that I used the code MNM50 to get 50% off my 3 months as well.
And the interface for that, you haven't really talked about it much, is really, really cool. I started playing around with it recently for the first time, because I'm usually not DMing. But you pick a location, like wilds, caves, towns, cities, things like that. And then you pick an action of what's happening. Action, fighting, resting, exploring, traveling. And then based on those combinations, it gives you this kind of list of increasing in intensity music. It's really cool.
That is, it's really simple. It's made music kind of a no-brainer every session, so really love it. And it can help support the show if you go ahead and check that out. Also, if you want to support the show, make sure to like, comment, subscribe, ring the bell. Whatever you want to do to support us is awesome. You can head on over to monstersmulticlass.com/support to check out Bardly as well as any of our other affiliates. And thank you, as always, to our patrons, Ed G, Muddleweight, Brian H, Craig A, Isaac M, Jeff W, Luca L, Star Shinobi, Vince M, Bob F, Joe P, Rick D, Sensel D20, Tyler S, Barents, Adam A, Rob K, and Gray. You all are great. And if you want to check out the Patreon, you can head over to that /support link as well. And generally get the episodes a day early and hear my specific ramblings usually before the episodes that I just like yelling into the void when I'm posting the Patreon link. I don't know why. So that's what you get. That's the added bonus. Sometimes I'll be like, here's extra information of just me rambling for 3 minutes because I feel like typing.
Yeah, he doesn't run those by us, so that's
that's how you know they're good.
That's not the opinion of the rest of the show.
I am not subscribed to the Patreon.
My yeah, rant. It'd be weird to subscribe to your own Patreon.
You're just like losing a small amount of your own money.
Right. My rant on Jeremy Crawford's eventual bid for presidency is really odd, but I think it comes into full form by the third page. That's it. That's the episode.
Yeah, thanks for watching.